Welcome to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner, the show where we say goodbye to burnout and hello to freedom through automation. We're Jamie and Jessica, and in each episode, we'll explore how you can transform your tax or accounting practice, giving you the freedom you desire as an entrepreneur. We'll share stories and lessons from industry pros who have successfully transitioned from being skill-based producers to thriving business owners. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools to build a business you love. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to this episode of Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. I am one of your hosts here on this podcast, Jamie Grohl, and I have with me
Jessica Smith.
We are continuing our series of Jessica's juicy stories about things that she has experienced in her past, in her career as a tax expert, and she has shared some doozies. This is not as juicy maybe as the others, but it is definitely scandalous. And it is something for you to think about when you're, you know, we're sharing these stories because we want you to just be exposed to some of the bigger things that can go on. And when you think something's happening, like, what do you do? Where do you go? So Jess, today is going to be one of those days. So tell us what we're going to be talking about today and which client you're going to be spilling the tea on.
Okay, so we're going to spill the tea on a taxpayer who had what just seemed to be a run-of-the-mill, like, employee misclassification situation that actually turned into a larger issue when there was a suspicion that the taxpayer's father was part of an organized crime scenario.
I want to hear this because how do you even find that out? Like, those are usually on the DL and, like, you know, how did you, like, what was the journey on this one?
So I think the most interesting thing about working for a law firm that did regularly deal, with, like, criminal type activity, you know, when I first started there, I think I was, like, a little naive on, like, how often bad things happen. And then you just kind of, like, get thrown into it and you're like, oh, it happens all the time. So really with this particular taxpayer, he ran a service type business, and the way that he kind of got caught, right? So the business was owned by a husband and wife, and it was the son and his wife. And then the father, we think, was actually the one running the business, but his, for whatever reason, he was not able to be, or he preferred to not be the owner of record. And so his son and his wife were the owner of record. And, like, ran the business. I'm using air quotes for the people who are listening.
Yeah.
So with that, right? And this is not an unusual situation. A lot of the times, if there are reasons why a specific taxpayer is prohibited from, let's say, opening a bank account, or maybe they don't have a clean criminal history and they're not able to get licenses to perform certain things. Like, this happens all the time. I don't think that this is overly unique, where you have maybe people who are the owner on paper, but definitely not the owner when it comes to, like, the operating of the business. So that didn't seem too off when we first took on this taxpayer. And so they really got busted because, and mind you, there are millions of ways that the IRS picks up different cases to review. But this particular person was running a service-based business. It was it had a lot of gross income. So the more income you earn, the more likely you are to come under scrutiny, depending on a couple of different factors. And the difficult thing was the type of business this person ran, which I think was, like, in the automotive industry, if memory serves me correctly, but there was no payroll. And the IRS has said on many situations, I mean, this isn't like a one size fits all, but there are certain businesses that you just cannot run with, like, in truly independent contractors, and get air quotes here for independent contractors. Yeah. And this particular business would have involved people being on site in order, I think, to, like, perform, like, I don't know if it was, like, oil changes or, like, repairs or something, like, brake services. I don't recall exactly what part of the automotive industry. So I'm just, like, using it as a general, like,
humans were required to do things.
Like, this was not like automated, right? This was not done by computers.
Right.
And so they did not have any payroll, but they did have a very significant outside service provider line item. And so they their file got pulled for what they believed was a misclassification of employees as independent contractors. Again, no payroll on this business that was generating a lot of money. And, you know, the IRS clearly said you can't run this type of business on independent contractors. Like, that's just, you can't hire like an, you, I don't, like, you can't bring in like an independent mechanic and be like, right, oh, you're going to run this business, and I'm going to provide all the supplies, and I'm going to give you the shop, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to provide all these things to you, and you have to be here from 8 until 5. Like, you can't, that's not an independent contractor, right? So you can't have right. those people be independent contractors. It's just the nature of the job. So he got caught. And I think the intent there was at some point to like put the people on payroll, but like a lot of people do when they're new in business, like you're so cautious about your cash flow and keeping the doors open sometimes that the thought of having to pay payroll taxes is very overwhelming, like extremely yeah. overwhelming. So I think that was the intent down the line, but unfortunately it didn't happen before they got picked up for audit. So in the event of an employee reclassification audit, the amount that are paid to these people are verified through whatever records are able, whether that be through bank records to show payments. There weren't even 1099s issued to these people, which was the other issue. He had a very large...
The next question, but...
Yeah,
big... They were not up here at all.
Independent contractor expense without the issuing of the 1099s.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of kind of things working against this particular taxpayer. All in all, I think after everything got assessed, so the way that this works is in a reclassification audit, they take what was paid to that person, they essentially reverse it as an independent contractor agreement or payment, they classify it as wages, and then they assess what all the tax would have been. And so payroll taxes include employer matching for FICA and Medicare taxes. So you have an employer tax that the employer contributes to those taxes. But the other part of that is what is referred to as the trust fund portion of a payroll assessment, which includes all of the money that you were required to withhold from what you paid your employees. So this includes income tax withholding, your Social Security, and your Medicare withholdings. Mm-hmm. So in the eyes of the IRS, when you as an employer withhold those but don't pay them to the IRS or to the state, they believe, or the way they look at it, is that you're actually stealing, because it's the wages that you have agreed to pay them, and mm-hmm. you are then not remitting those taxes. So you've essentially not paid them the wages, right? So the IRS right. looks at it as theft. It's got a very high level of like, hey, we are not going to take this easy on you.
Yeah.
So after all that assessment, I think this person had, I think it was 2 tax years that he got caught for. So the assessment that they get is referred to as a trust fund recovery penalty. And after they calculate what that withholding environment would be, which they call the trust fund, that then also gets assessed to the person, to the individuals, the responsible people who were responsible for withholding and remitting those taxes. So you have an assessment both to the business and an exact assessment that is mirrored onto the personal tax accounts for those responsible parties. And there could be tons of responsible parties. And unfortunately for this taxpayer, it was the husband and the wife that were both responsible, even though like their involvement in the business was literally minimal, but they were the owners. They were the ones, you know, responsible for the cash at the time. So they were personally assessed. It was like around $350,000. It was a lot of money. So the assessment is, it's a mirror. So you can have the business that's assessed and the individual. And so when payments are made relative to, let's say, a personal payment, it also reduces the business one. So it's not assessed twice. It's just going to appear because they want to make sure that the IRS wants to make sure they collect from somebody. Right. And so it's a 10 right. year.
You're not want to escape.
Yeah. You
this,
can't
even
escape payroll taxes. So it's and the trust fund recovery penalty, we call it, it's a 100% penalty. So if you have $100,000 assessment of taxes and $40,000 of that was for the employer portion, but the other 60% was for the withholding from the employee's pay, that 60% is also going to be assessed 100% to you as an individual if you are considered a responsible party. So you're on, so the business and you were on the hook, and it's 10 years from when they assess you with this. So this particular taxpayer had this like this big audit. Was off, like it was awful, and the way we kind of like came to this conclusion that maybe the dad was the one running the business and that it was maybe a organized crime connection there. This man was super nice. Like he was so friendly, but if you pissed him off, he had like a really, really big temper. And the interesting thing was anytime we would have discussions around like who was going, like the father was actually paying the tax liability, like because I think he just took like some responsibility for it. I don't recall all of the nature to it, but I think there were some conversations that I may not have been a part of, but I think that some of the other attorneys were in. But there was a rumor that he made a comment to one of the counsel about like, you don't want to get on my bad side, if I recall correctly.
The fishes.
And it was hard to say, right? Like, it wasn't like a physical right. appearance thing. It wasn't like a ethnic thing. It was just the way that this person carried themselves, the way that they were involved in the transaction, the way that they like really wanted to make sure, like to make sure that their son was not the one responsible. Like, he'll pay for every, like, it was just, you just kind of sometimes get like a vibe, right? He was always so nice to me and to all of the support staff. But sometimes I remember sitting in there taking notes and like, oh my God, this guy is so weird. It's so scary. Like, what is going to happen? But yeah, that was a really interesting one, because after the assessment, the next step was, can we settle this debt? Because a trust fund recovery penalty is also a civil penalty that is not dischargeable in bankruptcy. It's only dischargeable in the event that you qualify for an offer and compromise. And it is very hard to qualify for an offer and compromise. I know that everybody hears these radio ads about settle your debt for pennies on the dollar. And it's not a negotiation. You don't get to go to the IRS, slide an envelope across the table and be like, I owe $1 million. Here's $10,000. It's not like that. And I think it's so funny that people think you like have any negotiation power in that scenario. It's a formula. And the formula right. is how much money you earn that is used for allowable expenses, anything in excess of those allowable expenses. And literally it's like what you need to not die.
Okay.
Right. Like, what do you need?
Beans and drinks, yeah. and that's it.
What do you need to be able to continue to live without right. sacrificing food, shelter, health insurance, those things, right? So for some people, this is not a big number, and you could be earning an amount like over that, and they consider that to be the leftover ability to pay. And you take that number and you multiply it by 12, and that's the first step. And then you have assets, right? Right? So this gentleman owned a business. There were hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment that he had mm-hmm. in that business. And it's used in the formula for the offer and compromise. So you have to get an appraisal usually of anything that is of significant value. It's best to get an appraisal because the IRS will fight a like self-reported fair market value on an asset. So anything that I would say is like of significant value, and you're going to have your own like threshold for what that is, but you're going to want like a professional appraisal so that you can actually like support that. But that appraisal amount is what the fair market value that the IRS is going to look at. They, of course, allow for like the fair market value is first reduced by any outstanding loans that you have on any of these assets. And then that net number is then typically taken at 80%. So 80% of them, that net number is what's used for that offer and compromise, because they assume that if you are expected to have to liquidate your assets, you're going to have approximately 20% in taxes. So they want to make sure the taxes are paid. But that formula for some people, if that formula is more than what you owe, you don't qualify for an offer. So it's in this case, I don't think we were able to successfully move forward with the offer because of the value of the assets in the business that were not secured by any liens or mortgages or anything like that. And realistically, there was enough to then fully pay the liability. Yeah. And I think we did get them on like a currently not collectible collection alternative because it was really the assets that were the problem. It wasn't the income. It was the assets.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't recall how it all kind of like ended at the end of the day, but the dad was like, if you can get this offer pulled off for me, like I'll pay $100,000 to settle this debt. And we're like, oh my God, let's try to do it so it doesn't murder Solomon. But yeah, that was an interesting, in another interesting case to work on. Cause you just like seeing like the dad and the son like in the room together and you're just like, I don't know what's going on. Just note taker.
And also like you can see, you know, organized crime aside, like when you're building a small business, when it takes off and it grows quickly and you're in over your head and you don't know what you're supposed to be doing. And so you're just kind of doing, again, what somebody said you could do. And you're like, okay, we're going to do that. And then you start thinking like, oh, maybe this isn't the right thing and we should fix it. And you don't. And then you get caught. Like, you got to feel for them to some degree. Like, obviously, they made some poor choices, but it's so, so sad when you hear that. Because also, like, when they do take those assets into consideration and they have all this equipment that they're using to actually run the operation, like, you can't just sell those off and then, you know, be able to make income to be able to get out of your hole. It's just, it's a really, really hard spot.
This client was definitely like rock in a hard place. And it's unfortunate because I do see a lot of similar financial crises. Like you can literally make $1 million 1 year and have nothing the next. And I have clients that have experienced that. And unfortunately, in those years where you're making $1 million and you think it's always going to be like that, and you have taxes that you have to pay, and then suddenly you have no money to pay the taxes, it can be super scary. You can be faced with a very, very large balance, but like literally have no ability to pay that liability. I highly suggest to anybody listening to this who happens to not be a tax professional, like reach out and get help from somebody who has experience with tax representation, a qualified enrolled agent, CPA, a tax attorney, if you think that there might be some criminal implications, because it's not without hope. There are ways to put you in a spot, because the IRS isn't in the business of like decimating everybody. Right. It's bad press, right? So they go after a lot of the big guys, but if you truly do have like a financial hardship and you can qualify for some collection alternative that doesn't involve like literally selling all of your assets, then they'll do that. And a qualified representative can help you to get that. And I was glad that he, in the case of the son, that his dad at least did help him connect him with appropriate counsel, because I think what we were able to do was to get him on a collection alternative so that the ideally if the income remained consistent for the life of that debt, that they would have a minimal monthly payment and the debt would expire before it would be paid in full. So it was a relatively good result for that taxpayer. It was just unfortunate the method that he got in the mess in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, it's tough. And I will add too, like, as we're sharing these stories, if your interest is peaked and you're like, I'm going to help people get out of these like messy situations, I check out becoming enrolled agent, right? Like Jessica has an amazing program, the 100K EA, where she will mentor you and guide you through like how to build the skill sets of becoming an enrolled agent. It's so valuable to your being able to be more than just compliance, right? Like people need support in this.
They need
your clients to help, because untangling the webs that get woven sometimes unnecessarily and unknowingly, can having somebody as an expert to step in and do that with you can really be life-changing. Like if Justin and the team hadn't been there to help this family, even in their organized crime ways, ravel all of this, they wouldn't have, they could have been facing a lot of stiffer penalties, a lot of scary moments, a lot scarier than they did. And so I want to leave you guys with that nugget today, because there is such a great opportunity to move beyond just compliance and move into actually serving people and helping people out of situations. So, all right, Jess. Well, thank you so much for sharing this. And if you did find this podcast enjoyable, entertaining, share it with a colleague. We would love to know that you've done that. And you can also share a review with us down below where you're listening. We thank you for being here with us. And we look forward. We have one more episode coming in our short series of crazy stories. And this one's going to be a real doozy. It's a timely one. So do go and listen to our podcast. And we'll see you in the next episode of Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. We hope today's episode inspired you to take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners just like you. Don't forget to follow us on social media or on our website at workflowsfortaxpros.com for more resources and insights. Until next time, remember, automation equals freedom. And building a business that you love is within your reach. See you soon.